the determinant of an n by n matrix by analogy with what we found, we discovered was the correct formula for the case of a 3x3 matrix. So let me just briefly review that. So in other words, if we have a matrix A whose ij coefficient is aij, then the determinant of A, the determinant of this matrix, which we usually we denote again as with a vertical braces around the entries in the matrix, and say this is an n by n matrix, and then A n 1, A n n. And then what we did is that in for case of n equals 3, we saw that that was a triple scalar product. And I'll review that in a minute. But basically, the upshot of it, of that formula, was that this determinant was a sum of entries, products of entries, taken from the matrix A. There's going to be a sign. So there's going to be what we call a sign of a permutation. And then basically J1, JN is just a permutation, a rearrangement of 1, 2, N. And so for every permutation, you're going to get a term. And the permutation J1 to JN just tells you which columns to pick the entries one. You're going to pick an entry from each row and each column. So in the first row, you're going to pick the entry from the J first column. In the second row, you'll pick the entry in the J second column, etc., A, N, J, N. And the fact that J1, J2, JN is a permutation of 1 to N, I mean they're all distinct. So you're picking an entry out of each row and each column, being sure that you're not going to pick out an element from the same row, from two different columns. So in other words, you get a really awful looking thing there, consisting of n factorial terms. There's n factorial terms in the sum. And that gets really large. So you can see right away, this is a hopeless way to compute determinants for n large, and it is. Fortunately, there's a way out for doing it. Its value is for theoretical purposes. It has some value, but it does have the value, at least it's a number that we can look at. And we can actually, it has a lot of really nice properties that allow us to compute the determinant very easily. So we have a wealth of ways of computing this number without actually having to go and compute this sum. Because usually there's a lot of cancellation that goes on. Okay, so here the sign is, there's another way of computing the sign of a permutation. And this is minus 1 to what we call the parity of that sequence. And the parity of a sequence equals the number, well, it's either, it's even or odd. So minus 1 to an even or odd number is either going to be plus or minus 1, depending on whether whether or not an even or odd number of transpositions is required to transform 1 to n to J1, J2, JN. And we saw that that's what we saw was the case for n equals to 3. So in other words, if it takes an even number of interchanges of 1 to n to bring it to that particular permutation of 1 to n, then that number is either going to be an even number or an odd number. That's the parity, the evenness or oddness. And minus 1 to that even or odd number is going to be plus or minus 1. And that's the sign. Okay, let's just give, so for example, if we take the matrix A11, A12, A21, A22, that's a 2 by 2, then if you just look at the determinant, it's basically two terms, A11, A12, that's corresponding, that's the diagonal term, it's always there. And then there's another term, if you interchange 1 and 2, you're going to get, so A11, A22. I said it, but I didn't. A22 minus A12, A21. So in other words, I choose the element from the first row, first column, and the second row, second column. That's the principal diagonal. And then I'm going to choose in the first row. I'm not going to choose the element in the first column. In the first row, I'll choose instead of the element in the first column, I'll choose the one in the second column instead. So I get A21. And that leaves me, there's only one choice left. Then I have to choose in the second row, I have to choose the element in the first column. And so you get this thing. And there's a nice little pattern here that you see. There's this principal diagonal term. And then minus this. Okay. So you have these two things. You take this product, that diagonal, minus the anti-diagonal, if you like. Okay, so that's... Now, there's a similar trick for 3. For n equals 3. For n equals to 3, if you do the same thing, A11, A21, A21. Going too fast to the second column. A21. And then A12, A22, and A32. And then the third column is A13, A23, A33. Well, that 3 is a little bit too high. Well, there's a formula. There's a very nice formula for this as well. If you look at it carefully, I'll just tell you what it is. There are 3 diagonals. There are 6 terms here. We saw before the 3 positive terms and 3 negative terms in the sum. And what you can see what this is actually going to be if you repeat the first two columns. Just repeat the first two columns. A11, A21, A31, and then A12, A22, A32. Just repeat those first two columns. And now what you do is you take the products of these diagonals. One, now you've created another diagonal, and then you have a third diagonal. You take the product of those 3 diagonals, and then subtract off the products of these diagonals. And what you will get is that's going to be determined. So in other words, if we just carry that out, this is actually quite a quick way of computing determinants 3 by 3, if you like. If you really want to do it, a lot of time you can simplify it. So what you're going to get here, if you do this actually correctly, you're going to get 3 positive terms. You're going to get the principal diagonal A11, A22, A33. That's one diagonal. Then you're going to get the next diagonal. I'm going to write down the plus ones. The ones going this way are all plus, and the ones going the other way are all going to be minus. So the principal diagonal terms are going to have a plus sign. So you're going to have A12, A23, and then A32. And then you're going to have one more term, plus. That's going to be A13, A21, A32. By this rule, pardon? A31. Dyslexic. So this is A13, yeah. Which one? This one, A11, A22, A33. And then A12, A23, A31. Is that the one? And that those are the 3 positive terms. And the negative terms minus are the anti-diagonal terms going up the other way is then you're going to have A13, A22, A31. And then minus the other one, you're going to have A11, A23, A32. And then one more negative term, that's the other one, is A12, A21, A33. So that's the if you look back at the form we did last time, it's exactly, you saw there were six terms in the determinant, three pluses, three positive terms, and three negative terms. And there you can see the permutations, the columns are chosen in a specific way here to bring out the positive terms and the negative terms. Actually, I should have gone up this way in green and put the signs green and the pluses plus anyway to make it. I think you get the idea. Now, why I'm saying this is there is no such formula for n equals 4. The rats, isn't that terrible? But students are very inventive. They keep trying, and they pretend there is one, and with disastrous results. Why? If you look at it carefully, if you do it for 4, what are you going to do? You're going to add two more columns. I'm going to add 3 more. And then I'm going to have 4 now diagonal terms, and then 4 anti-diagonal terms. And I'll take that 4 minus this 4. What is wrong with that? Why is that immoral? Only 8 terms. You forgot the other, there's 24, 16 terms. They're orphans, and you didn't take those. They're all zeros. It might be true for that, you know, the particular example. It could happen. Those 18 terms might be zero, 16 terms might be zero. So no such formula exists. Don't try to invent one. So this is, I'll just make a big warning in red here. Oops. Oh, I can't, do I have a red pencil? Danger, okay. No such simple formula danger for you on the exam if you use one like that. No such simple formula exists for n bigger than 3. Use these, profit, but yeah. Yeah, if you want to be masochistic, yeah. If you can, I mean, usually you'll find that there are simpler ways of doing it. This will get you the number, not probably the best expression sometimes. It is a way of getting. If you're really stuck, you don't know anything, yeah, it'll give you the answer, but it may be unpleasant. But it's true. It's correct. You can use that form. It's certainly a valid form. It can be used. But the point is, there's so many different ways, as we'll see, of computing determinants. Some are easier than others. If you want to use this way, which is maybe easier in one sense, maybe more difficult in another sense. It's perfectly okay. Okay. But I just want to write down the properties of determinants. And these are the properties of determinants that can allow us to compute. So let's write down the properties of determinants. And then we'll do lots of examples, basically, today. That's all I'm going to do. So, properties of determinants. The first important property is that the determinant of A transpose is equal to the determinant of A. Now, for n equals 2 and 3, that's quite obvious. But if you do it for higher n's, the proof is analogous. If you just look at it, what you're doing is you can just show that the terms are identical in both. Because if you wanted to just interchange the i's and the j's, then to rearrange it in the usual way, you have to rearrange the columns back to the right, to the original order, and that requires an evener number of permutations, which is equals to the parity of the. But anyway, this is a technical thing, and it's not difficult to do. There are actually other ways of getting around it. We'll see another way of doing it, but you can also see it brutally from that formula. You're certainly not going to be responsible for that, but you're certainly responsible for the statement. Now, another property. Now, let's just write. You can always view a determinant as a function of the columns. Well, let me just take away the 2 here because I want. So if I take a determinant, I can always view it as a function of the rows or a function of the columns. And the properties I'm going to state now are properties of the of the rows. And because the determinant is equal to its transpose, the same property holds if I interchange the word rows and columns. So the second property here is then that if you have two equal columns, the determinant is zero. Then determinant of A is zero. So, and what that means is that if I have two columns equal, if I have two equal columns, automatically they're equal. Another related thing, actually, they're actually equivalent. If you take the determinant, say A1, and let me pick out two columns, AI and AJ, and let me interchange them. If I interchange two columns, the determinant changes sign. A1, AJ, AI, AN. So I is not J. Now, so if I take two columns, we just think, if I interchange them, the determinant changes sign. We saw that that was the case for n equals 3, and we saw how that was. If you interchange two columns, then that will set up if you interchange two terms in a permutation, you make it odd. And that sets up a correspondence between the even and odd ones. And those two have opposite signs, and that's why the determinant changes sign. But roughly the same thing works in general. Okay. That's the third property. Actually, you can, two and three are equivalent. I'll let you do that. It actually will follow from the next property. Okay. So the fourth property. Oops. That was the third, so then we go to the fourth. So the fourth property is the following, is that if I take a determinant and I replace, say, the ith column by, say, ax plus by. This is, say, the ith column of A. So in other words, if you look at the determinant and if you fix all the columns and look at it as a function of that column, it's actually a linear function of that column. Because if you look in the determinant, if you fix all the column entries, if you look at the terms, all the terms are going to be fixed because there's just going to be one entry coming from that column. And all the SSH you think are constants, it's just then viewed as a function of that, is just a linear function. So the determinant the terms are not linear because you have products of things. But if you fix all the terms in the product except one as a function of one, that's linear. So this is basically what that says, and that follows very immediate from the thing. So this is going to be equal to this is going to be the determinant of A1. Well, I'll put A in front. A x a n plus b. I'll give an example of this in a minute. Determinant A1 y a n. In other words, what this is saying, for example. So for example, if B were 0, what this says, so in particular, if you, let's just give in particular, a particular case, which is important, e.g., if you take your determinant and you multiply the ith row by C, then that C comes out. So it's C times the determinant A1. A-N. So in other words, if you multiply a column, if you multiply a column of a matrix by C, then the determinant you get is C times the determinant of the original matrix. So that's a very important property as well. So you can see what we're happening. We're showing you how the determinant changes under elementary operations. And basically, you can take any matrix and row reduce it to echelon form, or either to the identity or to a matrix with a zero row. And when we a matrix with a zero row, you can see that the determinant is of course going to be zero. And one of the properties of the determinant is that the determinant of the identity is one. So basically I'm going to show you how to reduce the computation of an arbitrary determinant using elementary row reductions to the identity or a matrix with a zero row. Yeah. Any C. Let's just give, for example, any column, fixed column.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's just give an example. Let me take a very a simple one. So if you take, say, 3 times 1, 2 times 2, or, sorry, 3 times 2, well, let me do it this way. I'm going to multiply this column by 3, and I'll multiply the other column by, well, let me multiply all the columns by 3. And I'll take some numbers for 3 times 5, 3 times 1, and then another one, 3 times 6, 3 times 7, 3 times 8. Okay. Now, by this rule, what is going to be the answer?
3Q.
Yeah, 3Q. I'm going to take a 3 out from the first row. Okay. Then I have a determinant left, which is 1, 2, 9. Then I'll take out the second 3 from the second row, and I'll have left, okay, and so, and then I'll do it for the third, so this is going to be 3 cubed, 27 times the determinant, 1, 2, 1, 4, 5, 1, and 6, 7, 8. I won't compute, well, I could compute this the brute force ways, but I'll show you how to do it a lot simpler in a minute. Okay, so this sometimes you can, if you want to bring down the numbers, sometimes you can use that to make the numbers a bit easier by factoring out things to make them easier. Okay, so that's this important property. Okay, now already from this, you can see that another important property that is a consequence of this. Is I want to use this to show how if I take a determinant, if I take my matrix A1, and supposing rows or columns over there? Okay, of course, whatever I say for rows, okay, I wanted to say columns because I'm using elementary row operations. So now here, okay, let's just go back and let's call these rows because it's going to, whatever I say for rows, this column is the same, but because I don't want to just read it. So rows of A. Well, because the determinant matrix is this transpose, whatever I say for rows, it rows for columns. Okay. So right now I just want to fix on the rows because the later ones I'm going to use for what I want to do now. I want to call about the rows. Okay, that's the only thing. So this is okay because I took out the 3 for columns, but that property I said for whatever I said for rows also holds for columns. Okay, if you like take the transpose, the thing that all becomes rows, that doesn't change anything, and then you factor out the 3s. So it's the same thing. So this is just a technical problem. So if I take determinant A1 and I'm going to take AI plus some C A times AJ, AN. Now what I'm doing here, I'm just taking the ith row of A and adding to it A times the jth row. Okay. So what I'm doing, I'm taking my determinant, looking at the rows, I'm taking the jth rows, I'm adding to the jth row A times the ith row. That's an elementary operation. I claim that that doesn't change the determinant. Why? Because you see, this is equal to, this is going to be equal to, let's just compute it using the previous properties. This is going to be equal to, using the linearity we had before, determinant A1, AI, because AN, plus A times a determinant, A1, AI, sorry, AJ, AN. Pardon? Yeah, that's okay. Yeah, okay. Why? Yeah, because you see that AJ, that's the jth column of A, it's appearing, that's a matrix which has two equal columns. In other words, remember what I did, I took the AI plus AJ, I've added to the ith column of A times the jth column. Okay, that's, so AJ is the jth column. So now I write the determinant using the linearity of the determinant as a function of the rows, then this determinant will split up into two parts. The one with the AIs will give me the determinant of A, and the other one will be a determinant where now in the ith row I have AJ, which is the jth row, which also appears in another row. And so, pardon? Well, it's there. I mean, here AI, I didn't write the jth row, it's somewhere else. J is not I. So here's ith row, and AJ throws here. And I add A times that to this. Okay, so when I take that determinant, I split it up using the other property, I get two determinants. And the second determinant, I have where the A, the ith row was. In that place, I have now a new matrix with the jth row instead of the ith row. And I still have the jth row there, and so I have a matrix of two equal rows, so the determinant is, what's the determinant for the second term? It has to be zero, because you have a determinant of two equal rows. So this is equal to, so this is zero, and so this is equal to the determinant of A. Ah, really, now we're in business, because now we can actually compute determinants. So we'll just do one in a minute here. And one last property here that you really need is that the determinant of the identity matrix is 1. Okay, determine the identity matrix. And that's obvious from the formula. If you look at that formula, it's only one diagonal. You're forced to pick that 1, 1, 1, 1, and everything else is, all the other terms are going to be 0. Actually, if you use the determinant, you can also see using the same idea, for example, if you take the determinant, not just the identity, use the same thing. If you take the determinant of a matrix, which, say, A1, A2, AN, 0, and anything above, this is what we call an upper triangular matrix, what is going to be the answer here? I mean, you don't need any special property. That just comes from the definition. That is always there. That term is always there, right? The product of the diagonal terms, that's always there. But now look, if you want to take, now I've taken out the element first row, first column, second row, second column, third row, third column. So now, from the other column, I have to take something out of the second row. Okay? Now, the point is, it has to be from, zero. So I have to take it, anyway, you find if you check all the terms, that you're going to get only one non-zero term. So if you want to take something from the if you want to take something from the first row, you're going to have to take something from. You've already taken an entry from the first row, first column. So you're going to have to take an entry from that in one of the other terms. That's basically the idea. You're going to have to take an entry out of that, out of those rows, and they have to be zero. So any this is that you can see. You can also see it from what we're going to say aside. This is one property of an upper triangular matrix. It determines the product of the principal diagonal. Okay. So let's just give an example of computation, example of how you compute a determinant using the properties. Say 1, 2, 4, 1, 2, 1, 3, 1, 2, 1, 1. Well, let me make it smaller because I don't want to waste a lot of time. I had one before, but it doesn't matter. Let me just take this one. So let's just take this determinant. So here, I can... 1, 2, 4. What I'm going to do is I'm going to apply an elementary row operation. I'm going to subtract twice the row, first row from the second. Twice the first row from the second. So if I do that, I'm going to get a 0 here. 1 minus 4 is minus 3, and 3 minus 8 is minus 5. And then I'm going to subtract twice the first row from the third row. So I'm going to get 0 minus 3 and 1 minus 8. Is that right? 1 minus minus 7. 1 minus, minus 7. It's too easy. Okay. Now, that is just by using elementary operations. Now, you see, I don't even have to bring it to echelon form, right? Reduced echelon form. I just have to bring it to upper triangular form to compute because I use this other property. And so then if I now subtract the third row, the second row from the third row, that this does, these don't change signs so of the determinant. Any elementary operation adding a multiple of row to another row doesn't change the determinant. You can do that without fear of changing. So this is going to 0, 0, minus 2. So the answer is 6. So the determinant is 6. And you didn't, you can imagine how appreciate this. This is for 3 by 3. You could have done it easily the other way, but this is, I think, faster, actually. You only need a couple of steps. Maybe the arithmetic is the same. But if you do it for 4 by 4, you can see that instead of having 24 terms to do the thing, you can do it usually. Pardon? Okay, I did one with this one. That's upper triangular. All you have to, that's cheating, but they're all the, you know, it's going to take a little bit too much. You know how to bring a matrix to echelon form. And, okay, there's the other thing is you know how the determinant behaves under echelon form. Let's just review that. So the effect of elementary row operations on the determinant. Well, first of all, so there's really three types. That is, three types. In other words, if you interchange two rows, the determinant changes sign. Okay, we know. So if you interchange two rows, that changes sign. B. What is the other elementary operation? Multiply a row by a scalar. The determinant gets multiplied by the scalar. And the third one, C, add a multiple of a row to another row. Determinant does not change. Okay, now you can restate this in terms of elementary matrices, which is really kind of nice. So let's just state this for in terms of elementary matrices. So for in other words, if I take the identity So there are three. Interchange two rows, determinant changes sign. Multiply a row by a scalar, the determinant gets multiplied by that scalar. And the third one, if you add a multiple of a row to another row, determinant does not change. Okay? Yeah. Question?
For 4 by 4 matrix, for example, if you can't row like do the echelon form, how can you do it?
Well, you can always bring a matrix to echelon form. That's Gaussian elimination. You can always do it. So you can always compute determinants this way. Okay. You may get a zero row. What happens if you get a zero row? Well, if you get a zero row, the determinant has to be zero because that row, if you multiply it by minus, it doesn't change. It changes by minus, but it doesn't change because the row doesn't change. So it gets changed to a number equal to minus itself, and zero is the only one. So a determinant with a zero row is zero. And that you can see also from the awful definition. So you can always compute determinants this way. And it's actually the easiest way to compute the term when you can bring it to echelon form. The kicker is when you have parameters in, it doesn't make it so easy, and you may have to actually use what we're going to call the cofactor expansions. We'll do that next because there are different ways, different things that you need for different circumstances. Okay, so here, supposing I take the identity matrix and I apply an elementary operation, and I'm going to get an elementary matrix. And then if I take a matrix A and apply that elementary operation to B, I get a matrix B. So in other words, B is the matrix obtained from A by the application of an elementary operation, and the elementary matrix is the matrix that you get from the identity by the application of that. So let's go look into three cases. Supposing E is of type 1, so supposing this one is interchange two rows. That's the elementary operation. What is the determinant of E? Determinant of E is obtained from the identity by interchanging two rows. So the determinant is minus 1. On the other hand, what is the determinant of B? How does that change? Same thing. It's minus determinant of A, which happens to be the determinant of E times the determinant of A. So we're here, the first step is actually, we're going to prove right here that the determinant of a product is always the product of the determinants. And this is actually going to be the proof. Yeah. Minus 1. Right. Okay. B, multiply a row by C. So what happens here? What is the determinant of E? C is obtained from the identity which has determinant 1 by multiplying the ith row by C, so the change it goes to C. So the determinant is C. And so what is the determinant of B? By the same rule, it's C times the determinant of A, right? So C times the determinant of A, and C is also the determinant of E. So I get it's again determinant of E times the determinant of A. And one other left, if you take, add a multiple of, this is C here, see? Add a multiple of a row to another row, and so here, what is the determinant of E? 1. You start with the identity, you add a multiple of the row of the identity to another row, you don't change, so it's 1. And again, what is the determinant of B? By an elementary operation of that type, add a row, a multiple row to another row, doesn't change. And again, this is equal to det E, det A. Now you can see what's happening when you do the elementary operations. It's going to change a matrix into another one, which has which is going to be multiplied by some non-zero constant. So if you have a matrix whose determinant is non-zero, doing elementary row operations won't change that fact. It'll still remain non-zero. Okay. So from that fact, now if you take a claim, this is what I claim, is that the determinant of AB for any matrices is going to be the determinant of A times the determinant of B. Okay. Well, so let's look at the case where there's two cases, basically. Is that A, case one, A and B are invertible. How do I know that in terms of elementary operations? Well, I can elementary row reduce that to the identity. Okay. And in fact, what we see is in that case, then you have A as a product of elementary matrices, E1, EK. B is going to be a product of elementary matrices, say F1, FL. Both invertible, when every invertible matrix is the product of elementary matrices. So the product AB is then also going to be a product of elementary matrices. EK, F1, FL. Now basically what do I know? If I take the determinant of AB, by this rule, you see, every time if I take AB and A is elementary, the determinant of, if I take a product and the first matrix is elementary, the determinant E times A is the determinant of E times the determinant of A. Let me just repeat that rule now, because now I have a product, I'm taking the determinant of, so this is the determinant of E1, EK, and then F1, FL. What do I get? Well, the first time, if I peel off the first one, I get debt E one times what's left. Then I peel off the next one, debt E two times what's left. Okay, so what's this? Is this is then going to be equal to debt E one, debt E k times debt F one, debt F. Because they're all elementary. So whenever I have an elementary matrix, E, determinant E times A is debt E times debt A. But what if A is of that form? Another elementary matrix, time another one, I can take peel off that first, that debt off from the first and get reduction. So I'm reapplying this rule that I have established up here, and then you see immediately that you get debt A times debt B. So that's the proof that the determinant of a product is the product of the determinants in the case of elementary matrices. Now the next case is what, supposing one of them is not. One of A and B not invertible. If one of A and B is not invertible, say that A is not invertible, what does that mean? If it's not invertible, it's rho equivalent to a row with, to a matrix with a zero row. And so what is the determinant of that matrix have to be? It has to be zero. Okay. So if say debt A equals zero, if A not invertible, then debt A has to be zero. In fact, that A is invertible if and only A is invertible if and only if debt A is not zero. That's basically the fact that the debt multiplies by multiplication. This property of determinant E times determinant of A under elementary rho operations. If you have a matrix, it'll never become zero by using an elementary operation. But you can always, by an elementary operation, bring it to a matrix in echelon form. So if that if there's no zero row, then that matrix has a non-zero determinant, the product of the upper of the diagonal terms. If it is not invertible, then you'll have a zero row, in which case if that determinant is zero, that means the original determinant was also zero. Okay, so it's not zero. Okay, supposing that now, so that A is zero. So now what I have to do is I claim then that that A B. So I claim that if that A B not invertible. Sorry, that sorry, I claim that A B is not invertible. So A B is not invertible. So claim AB not invertible. In other words, if you have a product of two matrices and one of them is not invertible, the product is not invertible. Pardon? No, you can have non-zero matrices which are non-invertible. No, we're trying to prove that. Afterwards, you can claim that. We only did it in the case A and B are invertible, because we had to use the invertibility to write it as a product of elementary matrices. We don't know that now. I only know that debt A is zero. And I want to prove that the determinant of AB is zero. So what I have to show is that the determinant is that AB is not invertible. Well, if it is, then what do we have? There is a matrix, say D, with A, B times D equals the identity. Okay. And so what do I have here? So I have a matrix. So what about this matrix? Let's look at this matrix BD. You have a matrix then there's a matrix D with ABD as the identity. I could have written it also on the other side. We know A is not invertible. Oh, that, but remember we proved that, we proved, but this implies, which implies that A is invertible, which is a contradiction, contradicting, which is a contradiction. Remember, if we prove that if a matrix has a one-sided inverse, then it's invertible, because well, actually we did it on the left. So in other words, if you take, because the point is that if well, that's a fact we proved before. I think we proved it slightly differently, but it's, in other words, if a matrix has a right inverse, so matrix A has a right inverse, then its transpose will have a left inverse. So in other words, the point is that if, say, if you have a matrix C times A equals the identity, then AX equals 0 implies X equals 0. So if a matrix, therefore, if A has a left inverse, then A is invertible. That comes from the theory of equations, because that means that the matrix coefficient matrix A is only the homogeneous system, it's only the trivial solution. That means A must be rho equivalent to the identity, so it's invertible. So that, in the other end, so that implies, so on the other, that's the same thing. By taking transposes, can show that AD equals I implies A invertible. Right, because if I know AD times A times D is I, taking the transpose, that means D transpose A transpose of the identity. But what I just shown, that means A transpose is invertible. But if the transpose is invertible, the original matrix is as well. Okay. So this is just that argument. So we now have established a very important property of determinants, namely that the determinant of A times B is the determinant of A times the determinant B. And en route, really, we have gone through another important property which we have established, which is that that the determinant that A is invertible, A invertible, if and only if the determinant of A is not equal to zero. That's a very important criteria. We need that, for example, when we're going to do the characteristic polynomial next time, to compute the characteristic polynomial of a 3x3 or a 4x4 matrix. Then that's the property we're going to use to produce the polynomial that's going to be able to compute the eigenvalues. So that's really the important property of determinants for us is this one, that we have such a gadget that we have a nice number that we can attach to a matrix, and using that number we can decide whether or not the matrix is invertible when that number is zero or not. That's the basic raison d'être, if you like, of the determinant. That's really what's also, but you have to be faced with computing it. So that's the other aspect. And there, as we see now, we have many different ways. Now there's one more way of computing determinants, which is the cofactor expansions. Cofactor expansions for computing of a determinant. That's how we define the determinant in the case three. Cofactor expansions for the determinant of A. So here, basically, they're like this. Remember, if you have, we called Cij equals cofactor of the ijth entry of A. This is minus 1 to the I plus j times the determinant of n minus 1 by n minus 1 matrix. We'll do an example in a minute. Obtained from A by deleting ith row and jth column. Now, you have the following expansions for the determinant. Actually, the minor, Mij, the minor, is the same thing without the sign, as I said before. Mij equals Ij minor. Is equal to the determinant of the n minus 1 by n minus 1 matrix obtained from A. I should have not find the minor first. So I'm repeating myself from A by deleting I row J. Let's just give an example of the cofactor matrix. You can actually have a cofactor matrix. Let's give it the matrix, say C equals Cij. This is what we call the cofactor matrix. Now the transpose of this is what we call the adjoint. And let's do a computation. So the adjoint matrix, you compute for each entry, you compute the cofactor, put those entries in the matrix, take the transpose of that matrix. That's what we call the adjoint of the matrix. So let's just do an example of that. Okay? Ready for the plunge? Ready? Well, let me write down before I do let me do one more thing. Let's write down the cofactor expansions, and then we'll do some computations. Okay. So the first is the row expansions. So if you take the ith row and multiply it by the corresponding cofactor, and then take the entries in the AI2, and then multiply by the cofactor of that entry, and taking the entries in the ith row, multiplying each of those entries by the corresponding cofactor, this is the determinant of A. So this is what we call the Laplace expansion along the ith. You have a similar expansion along any column. You have A 1j, C 1j, plus A 2j, C 2j, plus, and I'm taking the elements, A 1j, A 2j, A and j, that's the elements of the jth column of A, so it's A and j times the cofactor. That's also the determinant of A. And this is the Laplace expansion formula. Along the jth column. Okay. So let's do some examples of all these gadgets. So let's just use the expansion. Now where the Laplace expansion formula is nice, I'm going to now do a 4x4 keep you. So y, so 1, 2, say 3, 4, 1, 2 is, let me put this entry here and make this 0 here. 0 and say 2, 1, 0, 1, 0, 1, 1, 2, this is 0 here. 3. Okay. So now, here's a 4x4 determinant. And I'm going to compute it. Well, you can compute it by every way you like. But in this particular, I could row reduce it to the identity and do it by the method I had there before. But I claim in this case it is a better way. Can anybody see a better way and why? Yeah, so in other words, if I use a Laplace expansion along a third column. Now, when you pick an expansion along a column, you pick the column which has the most zero entries in it. Because every time you have a zero entry in a column, then that's going to help you. That's one less cofactor to compute, because every cofactor is a 3x3 matrix, a determinant of a 3x3 matrix, okay, times a sign. So every time I have to compute the cofactor, I compute the determinant of a 3x3. So if I have a 4x4, how many 3x3s would I have to have? I'd have to compute 4 3x3s. So that's a lot of work. 4 times 24. I mean, it's a lot of work. In this case, I would want to use the expansion along the third column because I have the zeros there. So you have to just worry about the cofactors. Now remember, there's a sign pattern. Basically, the cofactor is the determinant of the matrix you get by crossing out a row or column, but there's a sign, and the sign alternates. Starting it's one in the one corner, and then it changes every time you move. So the sign for the 2 there is plus, minus, plus, minus. So that entry 2, the cofactor, so this would be 2 minus 2 times the determinant. So I'm expanding along that column. All the terms in the cofactor expansion are going to be gone except that 1, right, because of the presence of the zeros. So I have the 2 times the cofactor, which is minus a determinant. And I obtained it by crossing out the second row and the third column. So I'm going to get 1, 2, 4, 1, 2, 1. I'm crossing out that column. Yeah, right. Wrong column. It's exact. So let me just put a little mistake. So I'm going to be crossing out this and that. It's better to do that because sometimes when you're copying things down, you pick things from the wrong column. So give yourself a chance when you're writing things out to actually make sure you won't make any mistakes. So 1, 2, 4, and then 0, 1, 1. And then 1, 1, 3. Okay. Now here I could use also a cofactor expansion if I like to expand along the first column. But there's a 1 there. Let me get rid of. In this case, I can see that I can get rid of that 1 very easily by using an elementary row operation. So what you can do is you can combine cofactor expansions and elementary operations to prepare for the next cofactor expansion, for example. So in this case, what I would do is this is minus 2, and I'm going to 1, 2, 4, 0, 1, 1, and what I'm going to do now is subtract from the third row the first row. I'm going to put a 0 there, and then a minus 1, and a minus 1. So why did I do that? Now I have in the first column, I have now a 1 non-zero entry. So now I'm going to choose in the next the cofactor expansion along that column. So what I'm going to do is then this is going to be minus, that's a 1, minus 2 times 1, and then the determinant of what's left by crossing out that row and this column is 1, 1, minus 1, minus 1, which for all that work, what's the answer? 0. Well, if you want to do one more bit, take out the minus 1 from the second row, right? And so you're going to get 2 into 1, 1, 1, 1. Pardon? Is this green? Oh, sorry. The pin is quicker than the... To me, I don't see the difference here. Okay. Okay, you do. I should look there. So this is going to be 2, 1, and I have 1, 1, minus 1, minus 1. I didn't quite erase that. And then this is going to be 2 into 1, 1. This is stupid, but I just want to bring it to take out the minus 1 from that row. Brings it in front, makes it a plus 2, and then I have a matrix of 2 equal rows, and that's a 0. Or, so you see how combining things, elementary operations with cofactor expansions, depending on the matrix at hand, you can sometimes simplify your work. Okay. Yeah. I'm using a cofactor expansion along this column. So I'm just taking a cofactor expansion along that column. Okay, you're starting at the corner. It's minus 1 to the sum of the row and column indices. The row index is, what's the row index of that entry? 2. and there's the column index. 2 plus 3, 5, minus 1 to the 5th, minus 1. This goes back to the definition. Or when it's the same thing. You start with, it's going to be plus if you take the entry in the first row, first column. Every time you go over an entry, it changes the sign of the cofactor. So plus, minus, we use that rule by just every time you go, starting with the entry in the top left corner, going over, every time you go one entry, you change the sign. So you've gone over five, one, two, three. You've gone one, two, three to get there. So it's three changes of sign, you get minus. So that's the way to do it. It also falls just from the definition, the sum, minus one to the sum of the row and column indices. Yeah. Okay. Oh no. Okay. Let's give an example of the adjoint. So let's take another example. So let's just take another example. So let's take a 3 by. Let's take a 3x3 matrix. So let's take the matrix 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 2, 1, 2, well, I don't want it too close to a non-invertible matrix. I want to make it. Anyway. So 1, 4, 3. Let me compute the cofactors of each of these entries. So I'm going to compute the cofactors. So what is C11? Let's just write them down. So the cofactors of this matrix are C11. Well, you can actually see them. How do I get to get C11? I have to cross out the first row, first column, and I have a nice little determinant there, which is 3, 2, 4, 3. So this is going to be the determinant of 3, 2, 4, 3. And that's going to be equal to 9 minus 6, which is 3. So that's the 9 minus 8.
Is it a joint or adjacent?
Adjoint. Adjoint. I didn't think my writing wasn't that bad. So maybe it is. Okay, of an adjoint. So in this particular case, it's going to be 9 minus 8, which is 1. This is where you get in trouble. This is the hard part. Okay, now let's go along the first row, C12. C12 is a determinant. Well, what's the sign, though? It's going to be negative. Negative of a determinant obtained by crossing out the first row, second column, and then you're going to see a matrix there, 2, 2, 1, 3, which is going to be 6 minus 2, 4, so it's minus 4. And let's compute, I'm computing the cofactors of the elements in the first row. So C13 is going to be, what's the sign, C13? No, we're computing adjoint, not a cofactor expansion. Right, that's, be careful. Yeah. We're just computing the cofactors, you would have that too. Okay, so if you have C13 is what? So it's going to be, what's the sign? Positive. Plus, minus, plus. And then the determinant you have left is that 2, 3, 1, 4, which is 8 minus 3, 5. Now, okay, this is tedious. I mean, determinants are tedious. After, if you want to do this for 4x4, but anyway, we're just computing. So C, 2, 1. C21, what is the sign of the cofactor? Negative. It's minus the minor, which is this determinant. And that's obtained by crossing out the first column and second row. And you're going to have 2, 1, 4, 3, which is going to be 6 minus 4, 2, so it's minus 2. C22. So it's positive. Determinant obtained by crossing out second row, second column, 1, 1, 1, 3. Oh, it's the wrong sign. 1, 1, 1, 3. And this is going to be equal to 3 minus 1, which is 2. And then C23, sine is negative. And then the determinant, you cross out the second row and the third column, and you're going to have 1, 2, 1, 4, which is minus 2. Now the last column, last row, is C3, 1. That's going to be minus 3 plus 1 is 4, so it's minus 1 to 4, it's 1, so it's plus. You cross out the entry in the first column and third row, third row, first column, same thing, which is 2, 1, 3, 2, which is going to be equal to 4 minus 3, which is 1. And then C3, 2 is minus determinant minus the minor of that entry, which is obtained by crossing out the third row, second column, which is 1, 2, 1, 2, and that's 0. And then C3, 3, the last one, is going to be positive. It's going to be 1, 2, 2, 3, which is 6, 3 minus 4 minus 1. Okay. So there's the, so let's write down the, don't tell me I did it again. If I press the wrong thing, I get an infinite page, and that's not what I want. Okay. Okay, so there are the cofactors. And so now I write down the cofactor matrix. So cofactor matrix, I have all the entries right here now. So it's a matrix, 1 minus 4, 5, and I'm going to have minus 2, 2, minus 2, and here I'm going to have 1, 0, minus 1. Now the adjoint of A is the transpose of this matrix, which is then 1 minus 4, 5, minus 2, 2, minus 2, and then 1, 0, minus 1. Okay. Now, I want to compute, this matrix has a very nice property. I just want to give an example of it here. If I compute A times the adjoint of A, unfortunately I don't have A in front of me. 1 minus 2, 1, minus 4, 2, 0, 5, minus 2, minus 1. So would somebody give me the entries in the first row? 1? Pardon? 1, 2, 1? 1, 2, 1. 2, 3, 2. 1? 4, 3. So if you do that, so if you multiply these two matrices, what am I going to get here? Well, if you take the first one, what are you going to get? 1 minus 8. Help me with 1 minus 8 minus plus 5. 1 minus 8 plus 5 minus 2. Now let's compute the entry in the second column, first row. So that's 1, 2, 1 times minus 2, 2, minus 2. So that's going to be minus 2 plus 4, which is 2, and then minus 2, 0. And then in the next one, you're going to get, for the element in the first row, third column, you're going to get 1, 2, 1 times 1, 0, minus 1, which is going to give you 1 minus 1, and you're going to get 0. Okay. And in the second row, if you take 2, 3, 2, 2 minus 12 is minus 10, plus 10 is 0. Now, if you now take 2, 3, 2 and multiply by the middle, first row, the middle row times the middle column, you're going to get minus 4 plus 6, 2, minus 8, minus 2. And if you take 2, 3, 2 and multiply it by the last column, you're going to get 0 very clearly. And then if you multiply the last row times the first column, you get 1 minus 16, which is minus 15, plus 15, which gives me 0. And then 1, 4, 3 times 2, you're going to get minus 2 plus 8, which is 6 minus 6, which is 0. And then if you do the last one, 1, 4, 3, you're going to get 1 minus 3, which is minus 2. So you see what you're going to get here is a number, minus 2, times the identity matrix. It's minus 2 times the determinant of A. Oh, minus 2 times, no, I'm sorry, that's a Freudian slip. I claim that minus 2 is the determinant of A. Let's compute the determinant of A. This is 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 2, 1, 4, 3. So let's compute this quickly. What's the best way? Let's use just elementary row operations. That's the quickest. So 1, 2, 1. I'm just going to subtract twice the rows, first row from the second, 0, 3 minus 4 minus 1, 0. And then I'm going to subtract the third row from the first row from the third. I'm going to get a 0, a 2, and a 2. And now I'm just going to add twice the second row to the third. 1, 2, 1, 0, minus 1, 0, and I'm going to get 0, 0, 2. And now I have an upper triangular matrix. The determinant is just the product of the diagonal entries, which is minus 2. Okay. So this is a very, this is an important property of the adjoint. In fact, it's a basic fact. It's true in general that A times the adjoint of A, and it goes the other way around. It's the same as the adjoint of A times A is the determinant of A times the identity. So what this actually does is give you another formula, if you like, for the inverse. In other words, if the determinant of A is invertible, you get a formula for the inverse, which is not a particularly nice. But it's actually, if you look at it in the case of 2 by 2, it's exactly, you get back exactly what the formula we gave before for the inverse. So if so det A not equal to 0 implies that A is invertible. Actually, it also follows from this. And A inverse, because if I divide the adjoint by the determinant, then that matrix is going to be the inverse. So 1 over det A times the adjoint of A is the inverse. So that's a nice formula for the inverse. The adjoint has some other. Now the way you prove that, you can look at it as an exercise. Do it. Prove this for n equals to 3. And what you're going to find is when you write out the product, the diagonal terms are just going to be cofactor expansions for the determinant. And then the off-diagonal are going to be cofactor expansions of matrices which have two equal rows. So that's the idea. So if you do it for 3 by 3, the same trick works in general. So we'll start.